Everyone wants to have like the right meditation.
Yes.
And the right meditation is just to allow something to wash over me, right? To have all those thoughts, but to be able to sit with them and not want to change them. It's a kind of filtering. It's like, yeah, like maybe I'm thinking about something that disappointed me, or maybe I'm obsessing about something, but just to watch that and just to be okay with that. Because then that helps me in an interaction later on in the day, which I can't foresee, where like that interaction might be annoying. It's through that process that then I can show up differently in an interaction where like maybe I'm impatient, that I can be accepting of whatever is happening. I may be led to a different path.
I heard it through the grapevine.
Welcome. It's AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, featuring the collected voices of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Alice, an alcoholic in transition.
Now, is that gender transition?
You know, that's really very funny. No, it's a physical transition. You know, I was in New York, then I was in Oakland, California, where I got sober. And then I was in Fort Lee, New Jersey, while I was in Harlem in between. And now,
So
then I
you're
was.
saying you don't know where you are.
I'm moving right.
Where in the world is Alice?
Exactly. I am shining my little light from place to place. That's what I'm doing.
You ought to be wearing a striped t-shirt.
Like Waldo.
Yeah.
Where's Waldo?
I'm Don. I know where I am. I'm in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure about that. Yeah, I'm stuck actually, in a good way. This is my home. Well, Alice, you know what I've been doing? I have started a tradition workshop with Monica F.
I love Monica.
It's a closed group, but it's an in-depth workshop, and I mean in depth. Well, here's the thing. I know the traditions. I've studied the traditions. I love the tradition meetings that I've gone to, but I've never like studied them and applied them to something other than AA as a whole. And this is to apply the traditions to four different areas of my life. AA as a whole, my work, my family, and my significant other. So to my wife. Have you ever looked at the tradition checklist that's published by AA Grapevine?
Absolutely. It is an excellent group inventory tool.
Yeah.
When you're in a group and the group needs to do a group inventory, there's no better tool, I would argue, than the 12 tradition checklist that the Grapevine puts out.
My home group has used that, and it works well. Applying it to all those different areas, though, let me give a couple of the questions. For tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. So it's about our welfare depends on our unity. Am I in my group a healing, mending, integrating person, or am I divisive? What about gossip and taking other members' inventories? Ooh.
Yeah. Anybody that's been in Alcoholics Anonymous for a while that tells the truth has been guilty at some point or another of gossiping or taking someone's inventory, sometimes under the guise of we're being helpful.
Yes.
And question really forces us to take a real hard look at ourselves.
Am I gentle with those who rub me the wrong way, or am I abrasive? It's like coming back to the steps and everything. These kinds of questions have changed my behavior.
Absolutely.
You know, there are people who are irritating.
Yeah, absolutely. In and outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's right. But here's where the steps and the concepts and the traditions all meld together. Love and tolerance is our code.
Exactly.
And so when people rub me the wrong way, it really is an invitation. My friend Brenda J. calls it spiritual sandpaper. It's an opportunity to look at why. It doesn't matter why I'm disturbed. It matters why I'm disturbable, right? And if my reaction is to be abrasive, I've missed the opportunity.
Yes. So to check that and consider Is this the best for AA as a whole for me to, you know, am I doing all I can to maintain the unity of AA? Same thing with judging other groups. There's questions about that. Do I look at other groups and say my group's better than their group, right, or meetings in my area are better than meetings in another area? Yeah. I mean, there's a world of stuff. So that's AA as a whole, but applying it to my personal life, being married long term, I've been, my wife actually suggested I might be an alcoholic back when I was drinking and said she wasn't going to marry an alcoholic. And she did. She did. And she stuck with me, and she stuck with me through getting sober and all of the massive changes that come with that in a relationship. So applying these ideas of the traditions to the marriage is our common welfare comes first. Personal recovery depends on unity. The unity of our marriage is the most important thing. Our common welfare has to come first, and that means surrendering my ego a lot. You know, marriage is all about surrender. Actually, I think that marriage was a surprise to me. I had a lot of ideas of what it would be like, but it turns out, long term, it's really about 90% hollering, "What did you say?" from the other room.
And I, you know what? I don't want you hollering.
What?
Well, that does not sound like a unity common welfare experience.
It's my hearing going. Alice, who's our guest today?
You know, Don, I'm really excited today. We're welcoming Ramon. He is in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. After that, we're going to have an excerpt from a new audiobook version of Prayer and Meditation. The print version's been out for a while in paperback, but the audiobook is brand new.
Yeah, and it's beautifully done. The book is a compilation of articles published in the magazine, 50-some different points of view on prayer and meditation shared by members of AA. You can buy the print or audio version in the store at aagrapevine.org. This excerpt we're going to have at the end of the show today is beautifully done.
What are the Grapevine's most popular books? Emotional Sobriety 1 and 2. Both are filled with experiences by sober AA members, many with long-term sobriety, about the positive transformations we can achieve by practicing the principles of the program in all aspects of our lives. The stories show how the rewards are serenity, emotional balance, and an increased joy for living. Visit aagrapevine.org/books.
I'm Ramon. I'm based here in Philadelphia. I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is September 28th, 2017. I'm so grateful for the invitation. I have been on this journey with Alice for a couple of years since the pandemic. You know, it was one of the silver linings of the pandemic to just expand, really. I think that the pandemic really opened me up to a world of Alcoholics Anonymous that I was not familiar with. I arrived at the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1997, but it wasn't until late spring, early summer of 2020 that I found the Bronx Big Book Study, and I started going there every night at 9 p.m. And I started to hear an experience in Alcoholics Anonymous that I had never had, because my original sobriety date was August 11th of 1997, and I was sober for 17 years.
Was that in AA?
That was in an AA in New York City. I got sober. I went to a lot of meetings, and I did a lot of service.
Well, that's scary to me. You drank after 17 years?
I drank after 17 years. I really believe that my relapse started at 10 years. You know, when I look at it now, I see that at 10 years, I was seeking something different, but I was unwilling to really access what was here for me, which was the steps. I still wanted to sort of do it my way and drag my feet. And I did find a new sponsor at 10 years who actually took me through the book for the first time. We would meet before the meeting.
For the first time?
Yeah, I only got as far as step five. When I look at it back now, I realized that this sponsor was passing on his experience, and he had never had an experience going through the work. And I didn't really know. I just thought, well, my sponsor is somebody that I call in the morning and call at night. And it was that kind of sponsorship where any problem I had, I would take it to my sponsor. There was never a relationship with God. You know, to be completely honest with you, Don and Alice, I honestly didn't even know what an alcoholic was.
How did it not? I mean, you must have heard it if you were going to meetings and participating.
I knew it, but not in a deep way, in the way that I know it today, that to concede to my innermost self, I really had to understand what I was suffering from and that it was fatal. And that it was a threefold disease, that it was physical, mental, and spiritual. During that period of double-digit sobriety, the way that I treated my alcoholism and really that spiritual malady, that internal discomfort, was through relationships and through accolades, through going to the right school and getting the right job. But it was all based on self-centered fear. And I didn't know that I was moving through the world like that for so long. It just was the only life that I knew.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
I so appreciate your candor. You can be in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, going to meetings, taking cookies, maybe even sponsoring people, but not following the clear-cut directions as laid out in the book. And if you don't, are you really in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous? And that's what I hear you making the distinction between. You know, I was here and I had 17 years of abstinence,
Correct.
but I didn't understand truly what my problem was, which is the spiritual malady, because I didn't understand what it was. I didn't have a spiritual solution. And ultimately, all of the stuff, the fancy jobs and the things and the relationships, they didn't work. No human power.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, none of those things treat alcoholism. And like you said, I was taking meetings to a Michael ward. You know, I was going to fellowship after a meeting. But I was doing everything the same way I always had. Now that I've been on this path, I'm on the other side, and I'm grateful that I have sponsees and that I'm currently just finished Bill Story with two sponsees this week.
Bill Story is a chapter in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is our textbook.
Chapter number one.
The basic text. I never knew all the instructions were there. You know, the reason we read Bill's story. Did I feel like Bill? Did I think like Bill? And do I think that this program can work for me too? Like reading it in that way, as I was introduced in the winter of 2021, when I first,
That was in the pandemic.
during the pandemic,
This was online, I guess.
online, yes. You know, as I said, I came back in 2017. I was going through the work with a sponsor. It was during the pandemic that I saw myself falling back into a similar path. I got up to my nine-step amends and I realized that I was unwilling to make certain amends. At the same time, I started to go to solution-based meetings where people were actually talking about the spiritual path, the 12 steps, so that I can access power, so that I can develop a relationship with God. And that's very different than what I had before, which was a belief in God, which was like, you know, I would get down on my knees every morning. Thank you, God, for another day of sobriety. And I'm just going to go about the day with my
Doing
agenda.
it my way.
My agenda.
Yeah.
So, how do you develop a relationship instead of a belief?
As a result of going through the steps, I developed that relationship. And what I mean by that is that first, fundamental, the foundation, really, step one. We have four chapters of step in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And those chapters make it abundantly clear to me that I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable, whether I'm drinking or I'm sober. And at the time that I started on this path, right, was after 2 years of coming back. And I found myself back in that hopeless place, still trying to do it my way. I really believe that God really, separated me from me because I was able to start to hear a message that I had never heard. And I started to hear people talk about a spiritual solution. And so that foundation, right? Step one, my life is unmanageable. Wait, I'm not drinking and I'm still have this feeling of being separate. I don't feel a part of.
Yes.
I feel less than. When I understood that I'm truly powerless, physically, mentally, and spiritually, then that's my foundation. Because from there, I can go into step two, right? Which is, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I had to see insanity sober.
I know I had to be powerless to accept that there is insanity in me, in my behavior, and in my constant desire to want to drink. Then there had to be that incredible powerlessness to be willing to ask a power outside of myself for help.
Yeah, because why would I plug into a different power source if I think I still have power to manage my life? So it's really important to see that, going back to your question, Don, which is how do I develop that relationship? It's because I have to move away from self. And in step two, I start getting that insight. And I go into step three and I make that decision. And I make that decision because I'm not a good manager of my life, but I have to see that. You know, what the beautiful thing is that going line by line through the book, I started to find my truth. And it was very different than sitting at a meeting, ton of meetings, thousands of meetings, and nodding my head and identifying, but then, I mean, leaving the meeting and then going home and just being in my disease, really.
Right. People call it current diagnosticism, that I believe that there's a God, but I'm still running the show.
You know, when I make that decision to go on with the work, to go through this process and to be in this beautiful relationship with this power that I don't know yet, that's really where the relationship starts happening for me. When I started writing inventory, and writing inventory was very different for me this time around, because every time I sat down to write inventory, I said a prayer and I asked God to enable me to see the truth about myself and this resentment.
When do we write inventory? What is inventory about?
So inventory, I use it all the time now, but inventory is really a way for me to take stock of the way really that I've shown up to life. And so we write inventory to see what a resentment is. For me, a resentment is something where like, I'm just in this cycle. I'm trapped in my mind because I keep on replaying this event that happened. It could be an event that happened last week, but it could be an event that happened 20 years ago that I'm still attached to, that is still dominating my life, really. And so it's a way for me and for us, it's a practical tool for me to really put pen to paper and just see it in black and white, and then see what is my relationship to this resentment currently.
I like this kind of wordplay. Resentment is like resent information. So if I'm playing it over and over again, it's being resent to me, and I might have a resentment in there if I'm playing it again and again.
And Ramon, which step is this in?
Step four.
And you said you had a sponsee that was in fear. Is fear a part of the resentment?
Yeah, so there's three parts in the fourth step. One is the resentment inventory, which is the four columns. Then we go into the fear inventory. And then there's the sex conduct inventory. There's three types of inventories that we do to really get a self-portrait, really. That's what I really think. I need to get a portrait of who I've been, how I've shown up in relationships.
A true portrait.
A true portrait.
Not the picture that I'm painting, because the picture that I'm painting, I'm always the hero. I'm always the aggrieved, right?
Yeah.
Which is what's so nice about it for me with the fourth step is working with a sponsor is that my sponsor sees exactly what's going on without it being colored like I do by my emotions and can see the true picture, and it helps.
I wanted to share actually, because this is a practice that I continue to use. Inventory is something that even though I've gone through this process, I do it probably on a weekly basis a couple of times. And I just recently had this experience writing inventory. I'm currently in graduate school, and one of my colleagues disturbed me. She was being negative about not getting a specific grant, and she felt very entitled. And so I was upset. She was disturbing my serenity. And I realized that I was expecting her, like for me to be okay, I needed her to not complain and express herself around me in that manner, because I didn't want to be disturbed. So the behaviors that were coming up for me, I know today are my character defects, is that I started avoiding her. And I started being dismissive whenever we were in interactions. And I thought that that was okay until I didn't. I was doing my dishes one night and I just kept on replaying this. Like we were talking about, Dawn, I was kept on replaying it. And I said, I need to sit down and get pen to paper. And so now I can talk about this, but I didn't see it at the time. And what I saw was that it made me uncomfortable because for years, I was the same person. I was showing up that way at a job. Like I had many jobs where I would, if I wasn't getting my way, I would gossip, complain about the company, complain about the corporate structure and this and this and that. And I would poison the water.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What it showed me was that, first of all, it's very humbling to have to admit after going through this process that I'm powerless, that I can still show up this way.
And that I have been, and if I'm not careful, currently will be the same person that the person that I don't like is. I am the person that I'm mad at.
And why do you want to change? The man I was drank, the man I was will drink again.
That's right.
Yeah, and absolutely. And because I think, you know, this is the thing I didn't get back then. The thing is that if I sit on all that stuff, it makes me toxic.
Yep.
And so, I mean, thank God we have a step 10 that we can continue to watch for these things.
Step 10, continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it.
Which is simply a continuation of step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9.
Absolutely. Because when I wrote that inventory, it was not enough. Because as it says, right, a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient because I can make excuses for why I need to protect my bubble. But what I realized in sharing with a sponsor afterwards, I got to see a deeper level of truth because I got to see how I was showing up and that I was creating this separation. I was separating myself from this person that's not awake. She's not in the program. Perhaps she needs to express herself in the way that she knows. Yeah. Can I just allow her to be who she's being in the world?
Yeah.
And really practice spiritual principles like compassion, understanding, love, tolerance, listening.
Right.
Can I just listen without judgment? I realize that I need God, that I can't do that on my own.
I love that because I want to ask you to say a little bit about how you use prayer and meditation, how God helps you, how you access through prayer and meditation.
I mean, prayer and meditation is huge because my relationship to prayer has changed through this process because I now see that prayer is a conversation between me and God. I know all the prayers and I can recite them, but I really have to personalize them. Like, for example, with that scenario, I really had to invite God to allow me to be loving and tolerant and patient and kind and understanding. But I start every single day with prayer and meditation, and that is not who I was when I got here.
No.
I mean, it's a radical thing for me to even say that I sit, the way that I start my day every day is at least for 15 or 20 minutes. And I still read pages 86 through 88 from the big book, which is upon awakening. It's part of our 11th step, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Because what happens in this process is that we get access to this power. We've cleared out the path, like all as you were saying, we clear the noise really with steps 4 through 9 so that we can hear the direction of God. And now that we have access, how do we continue to have that access? And for me, it's a daily practice. It's all throughout the day. It's just not in the morning.
So we come in and we have conceptions of what God is. I came in and had conceptions of what prayer was, conceptions of what meditation is. All that stuff has changed and is different for me than what I originally thought when I came in. What exactly is prayer for you and what exactly is meditation?
To me, prayer is really a conversation. It's about really being humbled, like I said, with that scenario and just understanding that to truly accept somebody or to truly love somebody. You know, love for me was always conditional. It was always based on what I can get or if I could get validated by you. But to me, truly to love and to be understanding and to practice what we call spiritual principles, tolerance, I really need to invite God in. For me, prayer functions that way, that I need to continue to turn towards what, right? Turn towards God, but it's really an action. It's like pausing. Usually when something happens, my first response is still emotional. I think for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, that prayer is pausing. It's a radical thing for me to pause because we want to immediately figure out or fix. Yeah. And so to continue to enlarge my spiritual life, I need to seek. And the meditation for me, it was really foreign for a long time.
Yes.
I never wanted to sit still and I never wanted to be in my body. And that's why I drank. Mm-hmm. And for me to sit still now and start my day in that, really in the presence of God, even if my mind is racing, to have that moment and just the practice of just sitting. You know, I used to start, you know, I love this topic of meditation because it was for years I resisted it. I used to go to meetings and say, well, my meditation is really running. There is that kind of like runner's high where you get like really in your body. Mm-hmm. But then I realized, no, it's really just sitting.
Yeah.
And being.
Ramon, this is just, I could talk to you all day.
What a lovely conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Now we have a 6-minute excerpt from the Grapevine publication, Prayer and Meditation, where AA members share the many ways they connect spiritually. You can find the print and the new audio version at aagrapevine.org. Click store and then books or audiobooks.
And while you're there at aagrapevine.org, you can further support this podcast by buying a subscription to the Grapevine in print or digital or both.
Part 1, A Journey into Prayer and Meditation. Chapter 1, Daily Routines. Members fold prayer and meditation into their sober lives. In AA, we hear that the only thing a person needs to get started with prayer and meditation is an open mind. But just how does one acquire this precious attribute? According to the anonymous author of this chapter's opening story, Meditation Made Easy, it can be as simple as asking for help. Noting, I had absolutely no idea how to pray or meditate, this writer pressed ahead, swallowing my pride as only the desperate can, and asked for some guidance. Over time, this member settled into a routine of just talking to God, and before long, I gave him an earful. For many, like Gary T. in his letter, to improve our conscious contact with God, maintaining and developing a conscious contact with a higher power can be as simple and as deeply profound as developing a relationship with another person. I can talk, I can be silent, I can ask favors, I can forgive, he writes, but others like J.H. in the article Holy Order of Doorknobs have had a tougher time with the higher power concept. My experiences with organized religion left me quite confused, angry, and belligerent, J.H. writes, yet alcohol had me beat. And having heard at a meeting that my higher power could be anything I wanted it to be, even a doorknob, this writer thought it was time to give it a shot. However, when a person chooses to tune in to God's will, and the ways are many, the results can provide added protection against a drink. As George B. in his story, Tuning Into Our Higher Power, notes, the first step in seeking God's will is that of becoming receptive to it. Meditation Made Easy. April 2009. At a counseling session not long after my first AA meeting, my counselor urged me to pray and meditate. Normally, I would have quietly refused while offering some frivolous excuse such as not having the time. Somehow, though, the freedom that AA was giving me to decide such matters for myself enabled me to acquire an open mind on the subject of spirituality for the first time in my life. The only problem was that I had absolutely no idea how to pray or meditate. Swallowing my pride as only the desperate can, I asked the counselor for help. She said I should pray to whatever I thought might be out there. I was advised to ask this something to keep me sober for just this day, and if I hadn't taken a drink by the end of the day, I should offer my thanks to the same whatever it was. That sounded almost too simple. Of course I would try prayer. What did I have to lose? To this day, I say those same prayers every morning and night, and I, who could never stay away from a drink longer than 2 days, have gone a decade and a half without a desire for one. Meditation hasn't been so easy. Strangely, the people at that one meeting I attended were no help. I heard some say to sit quietly and empty my mind. Others said to recite some passage from the big book or other spiritual text over and over. Some merely shrugged and said prayer was enough, as long as I was sincere. Then there were those inclined toward nature who advocated walks in the woods or watching the sunset. I leaned toward this approach, but soon found my mind wandering. My counselor recommended talking to God. This was a little tricky since I was still dabbling in agnosticism. However, I had agreed to go to any length and to keep an open mind. For my job, I had to face a half-hour drive each way. Talking to God seemed far-fetched, but as it turned out, I gave him an earful to and from my new place of employment. Even after changing jobs, my talks with God on the way to and from work became routine. They began to take the form of a real conversation rather than simply venting steam. In time, I acquired the ability to begin talking with no thought of what was going to come out of my mouth. During these conversations, the car radio stayed off. I found that the world's problems would still be there whether I listened to the news or not. Interestingly, those worldly problems had less impact on me after God and I had discussed the more immediate issues swirling around inside my head. I began to look forward to these times set apart with God. The difference between meditation and prayer became apparent. Meditation, practiced in the form of simply talking to whatever I thought might be there, was helping to change my life. I could deal with life now rather than running to a bottle in momentary oblivion. I quit the debating society over whether God is or isn't. I made my decision that God is. AA led me to him, and meditation was the principal means by which we communicated. I could never have imagined that meditation, which has played such a vital role in my recovery, could be as simple as having a conversation. Anonymous.
To improve our conscious contact with God. From Dear Grapevine, November 2005. Maintaining and developing a conscious contact with my higher power, whom I choose to call God, can be as simple and as deeply profound as developing a relationship with another person. I can talk. I can be silent. I can ask favors. I can forgive. I believe that every encounter I have with another person is potentially an opportunity for prayer and meditation, for acknowledging and recognizing my higher power's presence within me and around me. And the more I seek the love and beauty of God's grace in the people around me, the more aware I become of God's presence in the world. Gary T., Poughkeepsie, New York.
Thanks to everyone who subscribes to the Grapevine magazine in print or in the AA Grapevine app. Your support makes this podcast possible.
I'm at the very wit's end. Cuckoo.
This wit's end submitted by Don in Washington, Pennsylvania.
A recent study found that it takes the average person 200 steps to get to the nearest bar, but it takes 450 steps to get back. The results are staggering.
Thanks for joining us. The AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour is posted every Monday and is produced by AA Grapevine, Inc. We don't speak for AA as a whole. We share the experience, strength, and hope of members to help others recover from alcoholism. Podcast info, including how to call in, is at aagrapevine.org/podcast. Search AA Grapevine in the App Store on your phone or find AA Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube. All things Grapevine are available at aagrapevine.org. If you want to know more about AA, search online for Alcoholics Anonymous in your city or visit aa.org.
That was freaking amazing.
Holy Order of Doorknobs, September 2012. When I was a newcomer to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a tough time with the higher power concept. My experiences with organized religion left me quite confused, angry, and belligerent. I heard at a meeting that my higher power could be anything I wanted it to be, even a doorknob. My sponsor agreed. A doorknob? The Lord is my doorknob? I shall not lock? This floored me. It was so weird, but I was intrigued. I had not heard of any holy order of doorknobs, and if I had to find a higher power of some kind to stay sober, would this work? I was willing. Alcohol had me beat. I knew that. So starting steps 2 and 3, I went home that night and really thought about making my higher power a doorknob. I'd been agnostic up to that point, so I figured it wasn't that much of a stretch to make a higher power out of some sort of random piece of hardware. That night before I went to bed, I drew the curtains, made sure no one was around. I lived alone, but I had to be sure. Got on my knees and said half-jokingly, "Oh, holy doorknob, thank you for another day alive and sober. I pray for the alcoholic who still suffers. I ask for a good night's sleep, and we'll see you tomorrow." And I went to bed. I slept well. The next day, I woke up and headed to the bathroom where I encountered my first visit with my new higher power. The bathroom door was closed. What was weird was that I actually remembered my prayer from the night before. I knew that I would either need to open the door or explore other options, none of which were easier or softer or sanitary. So I acknowledged my higher power doorknob and opened the door. Once there, I saw the toilet lid down. I looked at that as kind of a door also. The shower also had a glass door on it. All of the knobs and handles on the kitchen cabinets and faucets got me through my coffee and breakfast before I even considered leaving the apartment through another door. As I prepared for work and locked the door to my apartment, another doorknob, I got into my car, door handle, drove to my work as a housekeeper in a hotel. Every day at work, I knocked on 12 doors, which I had to open to do my job. And of course, each room had a doorknob, on both sides of the door, by the way. On this particular day, someone was out sick, so I had an additional 5 more rooms to clean than normal. Throughout the day, I acknowledged each doorknob silently to myself. It was a consistent and constant reminder. After work, I went to the local supermarket. As I stood outside the sliding doors, it occurred to me that here there was no doorknob. So as far as this was concerned, there was no higher power here, unless the floor mat that opens the door. As I stood there staring at the floor mat in front of the grocery store, wondering whether God existed or not, a lady came out with her grocery cart and said hello. I said hello and immediately walked in. Ha, I thought, didn't need God for that door. But then another thought crossed my mind. What if God had sent that lady to open the door for me so I could go inside? Was I sure that wasn't the case? Could God send helpers? I didn't know. Why not? I decided right then to surrender. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? It didn't matter whether you believed in my doorknob or not. My life is easier if I use doorknobs. Otherwise, I'm trapped behind walls, just like drinking again. The day before my prayer, I had used doorknobs without a thought or care, and they still worked. I had been using my higher power throughout my life, but had never realized it. I never made the connection. Once I realized that a higher power was indeed working in my life, I started to try to reconnect back to that power to complete the circuit. That's when the magic started happening. The fourth dimension spoken of in the big book, when life suddenly becomes open and exciting. The rest of the steps helped me find my way and clear the wreckage of my past. So the doorknob has become a powerful symbol for me in my recovery. I was trapped when I was out there drinking. A power greater than myself for me turned out to be a doorknob. It set me free, and it wasn't even locked. J.H., Redondo Beach, California.